Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Thank you for joining me for another edition of the Daily Wrap-Up live. I wanted to discuss a lot of different things today, trying to play catch-up after I did a couple of longer live streams over the last couple of days in regard to the Seth Rich conference and a few other things that I felt were important to discuss in more in depth. And it turns out, and you can watch the live stream if you want to know more about that, it turns out that's, in my opinion, not as important and possibly more deceptive than it seems. But I wanted to discuss a few of the other stories playing catch-up for the last couple of days, a lot of which really kind of center around, as usual, the deception and the things that we're seeing today, and a lot about the misunderstanding and the wrong perception of what our country truly is today. And one thing that's been on my mind a lot is kind of this idea that there's a lot of people still to this day that believe that someone, let's say like Obama, but you could pick a lot of different people, despite not really achieving or following through or even going the opposite direction of many of his promises, most of his promises, still believe today that he truly wanted to change things, still believe today that he tried to change things. And many, just like we're going to see with Trump, when hopefully things actually happen, but if he continues to go the direction he's going and doesn't achieve what he claims to be and actually goes the wrong direction, we'll still continue to claim that he was fighting the deep state. And then all of this thing, all these, you know, theories behind the scenes with nothing much to back them up, will continue to go past that. And so I ask ourselves, I want to pose the question that really, how do people continue to think that the system itself is still worthy of investment, still worthy of our attention and our time and our energy, if that system is responsible for even, you know, playing devil's advocate that someone like Obama was actually trying to change things but was unable to? Why then do we still put our time and energy into the system that was stopping somebody, hypothetically, actually trying to change, or possibly something like Donald Trump? Why do we then vote and put our time in and continue to play a part in this facade if that is the system that is actually stopping these things from taking place? So I want to think about that in general and in regard to everything we're talking about today. That shouldn't be taken as an advocation for not doing anything. As you guys well know, I actively speak out about simply making your voice heard, getting the word out there, and doing things that you may I'm not also not saying you shouldn't get involved. I think there is something to be said for that. But it's a question I want us to roll around in our heads for why we continue to put our time and energy into a broken system instead of trying to think of ways to change or alter or abolish that system. Interesting concept to think about. So for the first article of the day, another very important one that I think it really gives us an insight into the real nature of our government and the people that actually control it, coming from theantimedia.com. World health officials stunned after U.S. strongly opposes breastfeeding. Now, this is a story that really does give us an insight into lobbying and how that truly affects the rest of the world and how it truly controls a lot of what's going on in this country in particular. Now, again, coming from theantimedia.com, it says American officials, led by Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar, attempted to strong-arm Ecuadorian delegates out of introducing a resolution to encourage and support breastfeeding and urge governments to restrict misleading marketing claims about baby formula. Decades of research have shown that breastfeeding carries health benefits for babies and mothers, as well as saving money for families. It does make the note that not all mothers are able to do so, so this shouldn't be meant to say that those people shouldn't be able to use baby formula. But the point is that they're actively trying to manipulate the information, actually censor the information and suppress the information in favor of a billion-dollar industry in regard to baby formula. Ecuador was set to introduce a resolution based on that research showing that all the benefits to families and mothers. But as more than a dozen international representatives confirmed, American delegates threatened the smaller nation, actually threatened them with cuts to military aid and reduced trade deals if they went forward with the proposal. A proposal they wanted that's based on factual information about the health benefits of breastfeeding. They're threatening them with a lack of military aid and trade deals if they go forward with this proposal. Think about that. The U.S. also threatened the assembly with cuts to funding for the World Health Organization. So truly ask yourself how a lobbying group in particular for a baby food company or a formula food company could have influence at all in regard to military aid. And the real picture kind of begins to materialize. Patty Rundahl, the policy director for the British advocacy group Baby Milk Action, stated, quote, "We were astonished, appalled, and also saddened. What happened was tantamount to blackmail," which, I mean, it is blackmail, "with the U.S. holding the world hostage and trying to overturn nearly 40 years of consensus on the best way to protect infant and young child health." Now, this story really frustrated me. And obviously, this is a small, like a microcosm of a much larger problem. But it really does highlight the way that this actually works. And not just in regard to the United States, but the larger picture and how it influences the rest of the world. And truly, strong-arming these people based on U.S. policy, which is crazy, in regard to baby formula. So really, we should ask ourselves, just think of, this is a small, I mean, I wouldn't call them small, but it's a lobbying group and on the smaller scale of all of these. So just imagine the power of, say, pharma lobbyists or defense contractor lobbyists, and think about if this is the control they can push around in regard to baby formula and stopping people from thinking, even talking about breastfeeding being a positive thing. Think about what they're doing in the regard to big pharma and defense contractors to the United States and around the world, and think of how much that likely influences policy in this country pretty much entirely, as far as I'm concerned. Very interesting. For the next story, coming from mintpressnews.com, entitled, "As the world rejoices over rescue of boys' soccer team in Thailand, Yemen's dying children remain forgotten." Pretty interesting title, and it's something I want us all to reflect on and really share around, because it's something that, you know, I very much talk about a lot, and I truly think that what's going on in Yemen is a horrific ordeal, and it's something that's not getting any attention, like due almost entirely to the blackout of the mainstream media. And also as anti-media, who reposted that article, rephrased the title, which I think is almost more to the point, "World Rejoices, Rescue of 12 Thai Boys, Silent on 300,000 Trapped Yemeni Children." Thanks to a major international effort, a Thai youth soccer team has been successfully rescued from a cave where they were trapped for nearly 15 days, which is fantastic. I think that's fantastic, and it's worthy of media coverage, and it's a great thing that these kids were definitely rescued. It's not meant to minimize what they went through or the fact that they were rescued. That's fantastic. Just wanted to point that out. "The boys' plight and the efforts to rescue them have captured the world's attention for several days, dominating news headlines throughout much of the world. Ultimately, most of the boys were rescued thanks in large part to an international collaboration as divers from several countries united to save them. Indeed, the rescue team was composed of 5 foreign divers paired with 5 Thai Navy SEALs, as well as a team of 70 support divers, 50 of whom were from other nations. The successful rescue of the Thai youth team undoubtedly stands as a testament to how international collaboration, stemming from international awareness, thanks in large part to the in-depth media coverage, which we see lacking in regard to Yemen for many reasons we've discussed already, can overcome impossible odds to save the lives of children and others in need. Yet while the now rescued Thai youth recover out of harm's way, children elsewhere whose lives are also in danger cannot expect similar treatment." Now, that's in particular true to tens of thousands of Yemeni children, hundreds of thousands, in fact, facing death from starvation, a preventable cholera outbreak, and a daily barrage of airstrikes, among other threats posed by U.S.-backed Saudi war on the country. So that's a very important article that everyone should reflect on and should share around, because it's interesting to see how much power the media truly has on how they choose to use their attention, which is very frustrating when we realize that the media in general today, the mainstream media in particular, is roundly, I mean, the fact that we can see so many mistakes, you can call them mistakes, intentional deception, just looking at the last so many years, but decades back, and yet people still put most of their attention into that. Many people, I should say. A lot of you watching now, let's say, are not those kind of people, but very frustrating to see how simply the media's attention on one thing or another can actually dictate the world's attention. And I think a lot of people are very aware of what's going on in Yemen, or either choosing not to see it because of, you know, the military, the U.S. military presence, or because they're not, they're choosing to watch mainstream media and not really address what they don't see right in front of them. But the point is that look at how much attention was put on this soccer team, which was great. I'm glad that they were rescued, while hundreds of thousands of Yemeni children are dying and in, at risk of dying. And nothing is happening. No media is talking about it. Nobody's stepping in to help them. And it's outright genocide. Many people, including the UN, has openly talked about the fact that possibly upwards of 10 million people could potentially die by the end of the year due to the combination of the airstrikes, the cholera outbreak, and the humanitarian aid blockade, actually stopping people from helping them. And think about that. Now, on a side note, somebody recently was giving me a hard time about simply addressing UN information. Any of you that watch this show and are you know, have two brain cells to rub together are very much aware that I think the UN is a major part of the problem. But that doesn't mean we should not address all the information and analyze it critically, like I always say. Very important to understand that. Just because we're discussing information that comes from a source that we may think is not credible or manipulated, it doesn't mean that we're advocating for them. I mean, we could talk about a mainstream media article and discuss the information, doesn't mean we're advocating for mainstream media. It's important to think about that. We can look at all the sources in front of us and critically analyze them. That's very important. But this story in general in regard to Yemen, I always think is important to get out there. I think it's paramount that this story gets more attention and spread amongst us as the civilians, that we need to see something change here. Obviously, in regard to Palestine, which I'm going to get into in a second with some articles too, is just as important. But the fact that there's so many people on the precipice of such a huge humanitarian crisis and no one's talking about it needs to not only show us that they're intentionally keeping it from worldwide attention, but that there's something more nefarious going on there. And it's very unsettling to see. Moving on to the next story, also coming from Mint Press News and equally important, is entitled Report, IDF Censor of Israeli Press Averages on One Redaction Every 4 Hours. Think about that for a second. I mean, that is, and it really probably doesn't surprise many of you watching this, but that is something that is very alarming, especially when we realize the deep connection between Israel and the United States and how that is something we are quickly seeing come to pass in this country. See, where information is let out, it doesn't, you feel it's the illusion of free press, but is manipulated and redacted and changed in the background, as well as the fact that the vast majority of the leading news agencies are completely controlled by government forces. This is the funny part that starts out, in the only democracy in the Middle East, which is that is the actual claim, that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East, even though many other places are democracies, much more so than Israel. Something like Iran is a democratically elected government. They just don't like to call it that. And Israel is clearly not. None of them are perfect. It's just clearly the United States is wildly far from perfect. But the fact that they call Israel the only democracy in the Middle East, I find pretty ridiculous. In the only democracy in the Middle East, military censors are working overtime to control the content of reporting and keep certain stories hidden from the public. According to a recent report by Israeli journalist Haggai Matar, if I'm saying his name correctly, for online magazine Plus972, Israel's military censor has notably increased the percentage of articles it partially or fully redacted in the Israeli press over the past year, a trend likely to decline as Israel prepares for potential war with Gaza, Lebanon, and Syria. Thank you to King Boba for the super chat. The report, which used government figures obtained via Freedom of Information request, found that over the course of the past year, 271 articles were prohibited by the military censor, and an additional 2,358 were partially or fully redacted. So 271 were completely just not allowed. So, that, I mean, clearly that's, again, something we're kind of seeing come to pass in this country with the censorship of all the different media that's going on. And it's important to understand that on a tangent here really quickly, right now what's happening with, say, like the Free Press or the Free Thought Project, where they're shutting down their website as a statement to say, look, you know, we're this is what could happen. Right now, so you know, the Last American Vagabond is under attack right now, and it's been shut down on and off all morning. I wasn't actually even going to get into it, but the point is that that's what is actually happening right now. As they're doing it as a statement, it's currently happening to the Last American Vagabond website. But it's happening to all of us. anybody currently trying to apply critical thinking and discuss these topics is getting shut down. And it's actually in a more surreptitious behind the scenes way, so it doesn't seem as obvious. It's in the form of, you know, manipulation with the internet services, manipulation in many different ways. But what they're experiencing in Israel, what these 271 articles prohibited completely, is simply the next step that we're heading towards. And it's something that always under the guise of some kind of altruistic measure, right, where there was hate speech or something. We see this happening on a regular basis. And as I said, 2,358 were partially or fully redacted as well. On average, Israel's military censor made a redaction in a story once every 4 hours and completely censored a story on average of 5 times a week. So one, that's crazy, 5 times a week. Israel is the only, quote, democracy where journalists and publications are legally required to submit their reporting for review prior to publication. And the only one where censorship can be criminally enforced. The Israeli Defense Forces also have the authority to censor books and other print publications. Sure sounds like a democracy to me. And ask yourself why this is not discussed. As we well know what's going on here, we well know why this is not discussed, because the Israel lobby has an incredible influence over what's going on in our country, as well as many other places around the world. I recommend you look into the Talpiot Project, which I haven't really dove into on this show, but it's something that is ongoing and getting more attention today, but it's clear that there's influence taking place when these things aren't even discussed. As we can point the finger at other countries that are verifiably more democratic, more free, with more liberty, while ignoring the fact that Israel is conducting one of the largest open-air prisons in the world and openly shutting down free discussion in their country that you know, condemns what they're doing. Very, very alarming to see that, and it's something that needs to get more attention. Moving on to the next story in regard to Israel as well, coming from the antiwar.com. Again, another very, very important one, and we recently discussed the flotilla, which is on its way to Gaza. And I found this very relevant into what may happen to that flotilla when it actually arrives. Entitled, Israeli Navy Stops Gaza Boat from Evacuating Wounded Protesters for Treatment. Very, very unnerving to see this. These are people in need, people in pain, suffering, simply seeking treatment, knowing they won't receive it from Israel. And they get, basically, they commandeer the vehicle and then turn it back around. It's very, very frustrating. So the Israeli Navy was dispatched Tuesday to stop a boat which departed the Gaza Strip and which was carrying injured Palestinian civilians. The boat intended to take the injured civilians from border protests to Cyprus for medical treatment. The Navy stopped the boat on its way, surrounded it, and towed it to an Israeli naval base. The military's statement claimed that the injured people on board are being treated by the Israeli military's medical personnel, which is completely unverifiable. Maybe it's possible, but ask yourself why they would go anywhere but the Israeli military for this treatment. Actually, the truth is that this isn't what ultimately happens. I can't verify whether they got treatment from the military personnel, but you can see any number of ongoing discussions from Palestinians that this is not actually what happens. These people are likely put in jail for trying to escape the open-air prison going on in Gaza. It's horrifying. Now, that's my opinion. There's no facts to back that up. But the reality is past incidences do actually back that up. The military statement condemned Hamas, of course, claiming the group was behind the provocation on sea and was trying to take advantage of injured and handicapped people. Also not backed up by any factual information. And as I always claim, they simply just go, oh, Hamas. That's why. And it justifies everything that they do, which is horrifying human rights violations. Not to mention the fact that they have no right to hold these people here simply when they're trying to leave on their own accord. They have no legal right to stop these people from leaving. Now, and it says, not to mention in the statement was that the wounded Palestinians were wounded, in fact, by Israeli crackdowns on protests. So interesting. It seems like, well, yet again, just like the bill recently passed that makes it illegal to film the IDF during these crackdowns, showing them commit war crimes and human rights violations, they simply don't want these people getting away to tell their story. That would be my guess. But the point is, these very people who they stopped were, in fact, basically harmed, or not completely harmed, by the Israeli crackdowns. It's very, very hypocritical. Israeli officials are arguing that the capture of the ship was in fact legal because they consider their naval blockade of Gaza Strip legal, which it's absolutely not. Putting aside that question, the blockade was imposed to try to prevent ships reaching Gaza with goods, humanitarian aid, and such, and is now being interpreted as forbidding people from fleeing the Strip, even just to receive medical treatment, which is I mean, that is a international human rights crisis. The fact that that's not getting any discussion, like all the things we're talking about, is horrifying. These people are being stopped from leaving Gaza. Think about that. They won't even allow them to leave. And we've talked about this in the past. But now we're going to see the flotilla try to come in with humanitarian aid. And I guarantee they're going to stop them at the very least and possibly do more like they did in the past with Turkey, where they actually murdered people on one of these flotillas trying to reach Gaza with humanitarian aid. This is just a horrifying concept. These people are suffering regularly while we focus on any number of other things that are arguably much, much less important. And we have to think of this from a human standpoint, not just about America. Obviously, we're Americans. Some of these issues we face today might be more important immediately, but to realize that our tax dollars and the United States deeply involved in what's going on in places like Palestine and Yemen, we need to realize that this is very, very important. These people are suffering regularly and dying and being abused, and no one's talking about it. I say that a lot. I always harp on these topics because it's disgusting that it's not getting more attention. For the next story, coming from geopoliticsalert.com, entitled, "Despite Hostile Actions, U.S. Exports to Iran Are Actually Up 60% in 2018. Again, just another hypocritical story that makes me laugh. There's more to this. It's an interesting story, but ultimately, the article begins by asking, what sanctions? Despite Donald Trump's dangerous rhetoric against the Islamic Republic and scrapping the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, the nuclear deal as it was deemed, U.S. exports to Iran are actually up 60%. In 2017. Although Iran is far from its closest trading partner, many average Americans may not realize that companies in the United States export millions of dollars worth of goods to Iran each month. This may drop off in coming months based on what's been happening, which would be indicative of the Trump administration's all-out embargo on Iran, which is in itself seems kind of internationally illegal. I wouldn't call it illegal. I mean, clearly they can do this. They have done it in the past, but just doesn't seem moral as far as I'm concerned based on the action that they didn't actually do anything. The United States is the one that broke this agreement. Iran never even violated the agreement. Anyway, I digress. But so far, this does not seem to be the case. It doesn't seem like this is happening, which is just another example of the hypocritical stance for the U.S. oligarchy. But these numbers are from to date. So you can make the argument that due to this embargo, that we're going to see those numbers fall off. But I find it wildly hypocritical that with all the rhetoric around Iran up until this point, nonetheless, it's still 60% up for this year. It just shows you that this is all politics. At the end of the day, this is about asserting U.S. dominance in the world and has nothing to do for, you know, these people. There's people making lots of money still trading goods with Iran while the U.S. strong arms the rest of the world to stop doing just that. I find that very, very interesting. But we'll have to wait and see how it goes for the rest of the year. I would imagine we're going to see a drop off to some degree, but very interesting. Moving on to the next story coming from MiddleEastEye.com, entitled, China Offers $105 million to Arab Countries Political Support to Palestine. Again, this is an interesting story. There's a bunch of different ways that we could take this, because obviously there's politics involved from every angle, China notwithstanding. And there's every government today is trying to manipulate things they see to suit what they're trying to accomplish. You could, however, argue that some are a bit more altruistic than others. Nonetheless, I would argue that all of them have some kind of surreptitious agenda behind the things they do. That's just what government does today. But this story is very interesting. Now, another way this was phrased by other outlets that published this, they simply said China pledges $1.5 million to Palestine, Yemen, Syria, and Jordan. I find it very interesting. Jordan's an interesting addition there, as they've played an interesting, weird back-and-forth role in regard to Syria, but Palestine, Yemen, Syria. Very interesting that those are the countries they choose. Chinese President Xi Jinping pledged on Tuesday $105 million in aid to Palestine, Yemen, Syria, and Jordan in a speech at the China Arab States Cooperation Forum in Beijing. The Chinese government will hand $90 million to Yemen, Syria, and Jordan, and he said another $15 million earmarked just for Palestine. The financial assistance for Palestine will target economic development programs and aim to improve living standards, and he will include donations to the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine. So very interesting. I mean, clearly the first thing to think about is, look at this. China is actually helping all these countries that are horribly suffering and the United States seems to be ignoring. And actually, the United States has a massive role in why these countries are struggling. But that doesn't mean that China does not have its own agenda here. I mean, clearly, it makes perfect sense for them to play the other side of this. It'd say, okay, well, look, the United States is getting a lot of bad press from its independent media claiming that they're, you know, clearly with facts to back it up, that they're hurting and murdering these people, these countries. So why don't we step in and look the savior and actually help these countries? But that doesn't change the fact that they're actually helping these countries. So regardless of the motivations behind it and maybe using it for a political move, still very clear who's on the wrong and right side of this whole thing, as they're hiding what's going on this side while China seems to be stepping in with money to try and help them. However, it also doesn't mean that that money is going to actually go to helping them. Who knows how these things happen? The Clinton Foundation is a perfect example of that in Haiti, how a very, very small fraction of the money they collected, illegally, by the way, that they took it for themselves, went to actually helping Haiti, which we've seen a lot of the people speak out and say, oh, they didn't help them, and then end up mysteriously suiciding themselves. Interesting. But in this regard, it seems very, very clear that China's trying to use this to their benefit, but in fact, actually helping a lot of the countries desperately suffering right now. Interesting to say. So we'll have to follow how this actually takes place, but I think it's an interesting sign how the geopolitical stage is shifting. It's almost becoming a smart geopolitical move to do something good. God forbid, because it stands against all the other terrible things that are happening behind the scenes. Very interesting. And for the final story of the day, coming from the Charles Hugh Smith blog, and it's actually a very interesting story, and it's the one that I've touched on many times in the past, which tends to upset a lot of people. Also entitled oftwominds.com, U.S. is now a third world nation. Now, this clearly gets under the skin of a lot of extreme statists and uber Americans today that choose to ignore the facts because they don't want to challenge what they think is their reality. God, you know, facts aside, who cares what the facts say, right? We want to believe what we believe, which is a large faction of this country today, usually stuck in the left-right paradigm. But this is something I've talked about in the past. I actually did an article discussing this called The Rise of a Third World Nation, and really in regard to the police state at the time, which was more than a year ago I wrote that. But this, there's a lot of points that I recommend you read this article in its entirety. It has a lot of great information, and it elaborates on some of the points that I'm going to go over in a lot of different ways. But this is something that we really need to take to heart. And we need to realize that our perception, like I was saying in the beginning, of ourselves, of this country, is a huge roadblock into actually seeing something change, because we don't want to admit to ourselves that there's actually a problem taking place. Now, he starts out by discussing the fact that a so-called failed state refers to a failed government of a nation, i.e. a government which no longer fulfills the minimum duties of a functional state, basic security, rule of law, etc. And also he goes on to point out that the concept of first, second, third world nations has been kind of like, you know, disregarded lately because of all this sensitivity about, you know, naming somebody a third world nation, you know, facts aside, I guess. But obviously there's political aspects involved in naming them, as well as why certain countries are stuck that way in regard to Western imperialism. But the point is that those terms seem to no longer are being used, except the term failed state, which is used often with countries that just so happen to be the victims of U.S. liberation. Then he goes on to say that a third world then and now referred to a nation state which was dysfunctional and parasitic for the vast majority of its residents, but that worked extremely well for entrenched elites who controlled most of the wealth and political power. Sounds familiar. Unlike failed states, which by definition are unstable, third world nations are stable for the reason that they work just fine for the elites who dominate the wealth, power, and machinery of governance. Here are the core characteristics, as he lists them at this blog, of dysfunctional but stable states that benefit the entrenched few at the expense of the many, i.e. third world nations. Number one, ownership of stocks and other assets is highly concentrated in entrenched elites. Now, you could make arguments for, you know, that being a choice, or people not, you know, choosing not to get invested in the stock market, or that they have not enough money to do so, but that's kind of self-reinforcing. It's an interesting point to consider, though. All of the rest of them kind of combined, they seem to make a lot more sense. Number two, the infrastructure of the nation used by the many is poorly maintained and costly to operate, as entrenched elites plunder the funding to pad their payrolls, pensions, and sweetheart insider contracts. Also sounds incredibly familiar, as we spend more, like, oh, I mean, I think at this point, I'm trying to keep track of the actual military spending numbers because it continues to go well beyond what I continue to state. But we currently obviously spend more than the rest of the world combined on our military. More than half of our tax dollars go to funding military endeavors around the world while our infrastructure continues to fall apart. Very interesting here. Number three, the financial political elites have exclusive access to parallel systems of transport, healthcare, education, etc. Very, very clear that that's happening in this country, especially as the wealth gap continues to get drastically different, and it's something that we don't see anywhere else in the world, even some of the worst considered failed states by the Western countries. Number four, the elites fund lavish monuments to their own glory disguised as civic or national pride. These monuments take the form of stadiums, museums, immense government buildings, etc. Meanwhile, the rest of the day-to-day infrastructure decays in various states of dysfunction. Number five, there are two classes that only interact in strictly controlled ways. The wealthy, who live in gated, guarded communities and who rule all the institutions, public and private, and the debt serfs. Very, very, very clearly what's happening in this country. Number six, cartels and quasi-monopolies are parasitically extracting the wealth of the nation for their elite owners and managers. Obviously, Google, quasi-monopoly, Facebook, quasi-monopoly. I mean, you could even argue monopoly, but for the sake of this argument, healthcare, clearly a cartel, banking, a cartel, national defense, a cartel, national security, another cartel, corporate mainstream media, a cartel, and a monopoly in its own right as well, higher education, cartel, student loans, cartel, you get the point. These things are very, very clearly cornered in their favor, and they continue to extract our money for their benefit. Number seven, the elites use the extreme violence and repressive powers of the government to suppress, marginalize, and/or destroy any dissent. There are two systems of law, one for the elites, and the example he gives is $10 million in penalties for ripping off the public for $10 billion. No personal liability for outright fraud, just as we've talked about many times in regard to Wells Fargo. Even with the $1 billion fine, they just brush it off because they make another $10 billion in the time they can sneeze after paying that. It's crazy that this is how this takes place. And it says, and one for the unprotected, unprivileged, such as a 10-year prison sentence for minor drug infractions, renditions and assassinations, all legal, of course, and institutional forces of violence. Very, very much what's happening in this country. Number eight, dysfunctional institutions with unlimited power to extract money via junk fees, licensing fees, parking tickets, penalties, late fees, etc., all without recourse. Number nine, the well-paid factotums, bureaucrats, technocrat lackeys, and enforcers who fatten their own skims and pensions at the expense of the public and slavishly serve the interests of the entrenched elites embrace the delusion that they're wealthy and the system is working great. Now, if you don't think that those all incredibly represent this country, you are being willfully blind to what's going on. Now, clearly, this is this one man's opinion, but there are actually, and I'll include this in the show notes as well, the article I wrote about the rise of a third world nation. There are actually recognized signs of a third world nation. And not only does the U.S. completely hit every single check mark, but we are 10 times past some of the worst markers. And that is a horrifying thought. And this kind of goes to the concept of the fact that our perception of ourselves is what's stopping a lot of change from happening. That we somehow manage to look at the wealthy 1% on TV and the news and think that, look, that's what we could do if we really try hard. Well, certainly there is some truth to that. People can succeed, but there is everything stopping us today, everything keeping us from rising past our debt serf mentality. And look at student loans are a great example, like he mentioned, that the way that the system seems to lead us is that we need to get loans to go to college to possibly succeed. And in this kind of circle of ridiculous logic, we end up indebting ourselves that we can never get out of and never get past that point. The point is the entire system is designed to keep us entrenched in this debt slavery and many, many other forces of, you know, police state enforcement. And this is very frustrating that we can't see this. It's the same way we pretend to think that we have our rights and our free speech, and we do to some degree. I'm able to have this conversation with you and you're able to tune in, but it's very largely suppressed. My website is probably still down right now due to some mysterious issue that all the team is trying to figure out what's going on as it dances up and down saying either maintenance or 504 error when none of that's taking place. There's ways of suppressing the information and keeping it. They control all of the means of interaction. So in ways that we don't even realize, they are actually continuing to suppress the free exchange of ideas, which is a tenet of an actual free society. And so we have to realize that until we can actually recognize what's really going on and see past this illusion, this two-party deception that keeps us thinking we're involved in some kind of a free debate, we will never see something real happen. And we have to get that out there. Now, clearly all of you watching right now are more than likely very aware of this as you watch this show, as you talk about it, but maybe, just maybe, there's one or two people that just happen to tune in that are listening. So those are the people I'm talking to. Listen to this, think about it, apply critical thinking, stand back and actually analyze what's in front of you, as opposed to just applying your preconceived ideas onto what they tell you is your reality. Think about that on a regular basis. I appreciate all of you for tuning in today. And as you know, I'm going to continue to do some more long research shows that I'll actually be paying attention to the chat and interact with you guys. I'll do that at least once a week, just so you know. These shows are trying to actually skim down, even though this clearly went longer than I wanted today. But I appreciate you tuning in. I love you all. And I really do value your interaction. I value your help in spreading the word and keeping The Last American Vagabond something that's actually creating physical, tangible change in the world, which is what we desperately need. So please make sure you check us out on Patreon, as well as any other many of our mediums, BitChute, DTube, Steemit, all the ways that we try to get this out there and help us spread the word. I appreciate all of you, and make sure you check out all of the show notes as well and the independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything you see. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.